Our studio has been turned yellow by the man in the yellow tux because today we are creating fans and doing the opposite of our competition. Please welcome our very special guest, Mr. Jesse Cole, owner of the Savannah Bananas and keynote speaker for the Stronger Business Summit 2022. And in that spirit, I will now welcome you to the Stronger Business Podcast.
Welcome to the most exciting episode we have ever had on the Stronger Business Podcast. All of you are in for a crazy treat today. Author, keynote speaker, entrepreneur, owner of a baseball team, ESPN star, podcast host, been on hundreds of hot podcasts, my man, Jesse Cole, welcome to the podcast.
Yes, fired up to be with you guys. Let's have some fun.
Dude, you are everywhere right now. ESPN, social media. It's like, I mean, we all want to be in Banana Land. Like, it's been so awesome to watch. I'm sure things are crazy in your life right now.
Well, they're fun now. But yeah, it was just a few years ago. I wasn't invited anywhere to go on a show, to speak to the Rotary, to go on. And now it's obviously changed a little bit. So yeah, I'm honored to be with you guys. And I think when you can believe in something, you keep doing it and keep doing it and keep learning and learning faster than anyone else, it gives you opportunities you never thought you'd have.
So not so subtle, like this isn't a secret to anybody right now, but you're our keynote speaker at the Stronger Business Summit coming up in October. Man, we're so excited to have you for that. Can you give us a little glimpse of maybe something you might be talking about at the summit? Like, wet our tongues a little bit for what's to come.
Oh, geez. Well, the one thing that I've been obsessed with for a very long time is I'm obsessed with creating fans and creating raving fans. And it's easy to see in a sports environment, but whatever business you're in, I think right now there's so many people chasing customers, so many people trying to drive sales and revenue and profit. How many conversations are people having about how to drive fans, how to create more fans? If you create more fans, everything else takes care of itself. So I'm going to dive into some real fun ways. And you better believe this ain't just going to be a speech. I'm not a speaker. What I am, and I know, I appreciate you calling me a keynote speaker. You know, I'm more of a showman. I'm a performer. So you better believe there's going to be dancing. There's going to be singing. There's going to be mixed in some lessons, and we're going to have some fun. And that's what makes it interesting for me and hopefully the whole audience.
Yes, I love it. And that's like the reason it's so exciting for us is the point of the Stronger Business Summit is to mix in awesome business content with awesome experiences. And you've like helped us just take this to the next level through your book, through things we've learned about you being in the keynote. So the whole day is going to be epic, and it's going to end with you. And man, I'm pumped about it. There's so much energy and vibe already behind it. But obviously you didn't start out wearing this yellow tux. You didn't start out with the fans first mentality, I'm assuming. How did all this get kicked off for you, and how did you end up here?
Yes, I was an only child, grew up south of Boston, played baseball my whole life. It's one bond me and my dad had. That's what we did. I was fortunate. I got to be bat boy for the Red Sox when I was 5 years old, and I got to pitch at Fenway when I was 20 years old. And so my big goal was to get drafted by the Red Sox. I visualized it all the time and was fortunate to get a full scholarship to play down college baseball, Division I down in South Carolina at Wofford College. And that was my dream, baseball. And then boom, tore my shoulder my senior year, rotator cuff, labrum, just like that. My baseball dream was over. And so at that point, I had no idea what I was going to do. I actually went into coaching, and I remember sitting in the dugout in the Cape Cod League, the best players in the country, the best seat in the house, and I was bored out of my mind. I was like, I love playing the game, but hated watching the game. And it was at that moment I realized, you know what? The game could be fun to watch too for people that didn't even play. And what could we create something like that? So yeah, I started as an intern. Team in Spartanburg, South Carolina. Then I became a GM at 23 of a team in Gastonia that only had $268 in the bank account my first day and 200 fans coming to the games. I mean, it was as bad as it could get. And that's when I really dug in and started learning everything from P.T. Barnum, Walt Disney, and Bill Veeck, and SNL, and Cirque du Soleil, and Blue Man Group, and WWE, and Grateful Dead. I started learning about all the best entertaining companies in the world. And I realized that we're not in the baseball business, we're in the entertainment business. So that was 15, 16 years ago they started. And, you know, now obviously we've had a little bit of success in Savannah.
I want to know if you knew before you took the GM position that there was $68 in the bank, or if that was something that they let you in on as soon as, okay, you're GM now. Hey, buddy, by the way, we have $68.
It was actually $268. So don't sell those 200, like that $268.
That's a lot of money.
three full-time employees and payroll was on Friday. So I honestly, I went months without paying myself. And it was funny because back then I didn't know any better. I was like, I'm going to sell something every day. And I was a salesperson. So I was like, I got to sell. Even if I remember like end of one day, it was like 4:45. I was like, I'm just going to call this law firm and sell them a $100 family plan. And I got it. I remember like Thomas Hunt attorney. He's like, all right, we'll buy one, kid. And he's like, all right. I'm like, yes, I got one. Get to the next day and try to sell something. And I learned through that, that people weren't that excited about a baseball team. They wanted entertainment. They wanted something fun. So I remember one meeting, this is with a big HR company. You know, they had like 300 employees. I was like, if I could just get them to buy tickets for the whole employees, it'd be like the biggest night in history for this team. So I was like, I'm going to go in there. She's like, none of our people like baseball. And I go, well, it's not a baseball game. She goes, well, what is it? I'm like, it's a circus. She goes, I thought you're a baseball team. I go, no, our players do choreographed dances every game. She's like, they do? And at that point, I had no idea. They didn't. We weren't even doing any of that. But I was like, they're going to dance. And she's like, oh, that sounds fun. That's so much different than any other team. I go, yeah. So somehow I convinced her. And then I had to figure out how to get players to do choreographed dances and make it a circus. So, you know, one of the great philosophies I've learned is start before you are ready. Start before you're ready. And so I was just like, all right, we're going to start and start telling people that we're a circus, we're about entertainment, and then we better figure it out. And that forced us to have some success with that first team and then eventually buy Savannah and go from there.
And when you bought Savannah, now watching Banana Land, this was not a smooth sailing, like profitable venture from the start. I think I heard at one point you were $1.8 million in debt and overdrafted the bank account. And you're like, oh my God, we got to figure out how to keep going.
Yes, thank you for bringing that up again. That was a great moment in my past, so I appreciate that. Why don't we just go back to January 15th, 2016, after we'd only sold a handful of tickets at 4:45 p.m. that I got the phone call that we'd overdrafted our account and we were completely out of money. And then hours later, my wife, Emily, said, Jesse, we have to sell our house. And then we sold our dream house and we found a dump in Savannah that no one wanted, got an airbed and we're sleeping and there were cockroaches that were landing on my face on a regular basis. We slept with socks in that airbed because it was so disgusting. We only had $30 to grocery shop for an entire week, which means you're not eating real food. Yeah, let's go back there.
I love it.
Chad is smooth, Jesse.
All right, so I do want to live there for a second, because as entrepreneurs, I think we all end up in that space, at least on maybe not that level, but on some level at different times. During that, were you thinking of a plan B? Were you just so passionate in knowing this was going to work if you got to the finish line? What was your mindset during that period?
You know, a lot of times you don't have any other options. Everyone asks me that question. It's like, Jesse, how were you doing back then? I'm like, I don't know. I just kept waking up and saying, we got to figure this out. Yeah. Like, you know, yeah. It was just... we had no other options. We went from zero debt to, yes, seven figures in debt. And we had a team. We bought the expansion rights. We owed lots of money. So we just had to show up. And the big aha for me is, like, when I first came to Savannah, I wasn't wearing the yellow tuxedo. I was too scared. I wore it with the other team in Gastonia, which people didn't realize.
No that. Way.
I wore it with the other team. I was too scared. And we were marketing like everyone else. We were doing social media like everyone else. We were making cold calls like everyone else. And we were getting results actually worse than everyone else because we hadn't proved ourselves in this market. It wasn't until me and Emily were like, we just got to go all in. We're going to name the team after the bananas. No one wanted that. Actually, one out of 1,000 suggested it. Lynn Moses, the 62-year-old retired nurse who probably put it as a joke. It's like, the bananas, they'll never pick this. We did. And we had this idea that literally, let's just go all in. And so, you know, you have to get people excited. You have to be able to scream from the mountaintops who you are and what you stand for. But they really won't ever truly get excited until they actually get to experience it. So we had like 9 months to tell me about every ticket's all inclusive, all your burgers, hot dogs, chicken sandwiches, popcorn, soda, dessert, everything. You know, we're gonna have players dancing, a pep band, a banana baby, a break dancing coach, the banana nana, senior citizen dance team. Everyone's like, what are you talking about, crazy guy in a yellow tuxedo? And I was like, just come and see it. And it wasn't until they saw it. They showed up that first night and they were like, we've never seen anything like this. And the three words we think about a lot is you wouldn't believe. How do you get people to say you wouldn't believe what they saw today? And they came in and they said, you wouldn't believe what happened at the ballpark. And then they told everyone. And from that day, you know, we've sold out every single game. Our wait list just passed over 80,000 tickets and 80,000 people on the wait list. And now we're, you know, traveling all over the country, taking the show to.
So you had this recipe for success with your previous team. And then you're coming into Savannah to, like, basically take a product you have some experience with to a brand new market. And you're having to tell them, like, hey, here's what to expect. What was it that kept you from going all in on the yellow tux when you came to Savannah? Were you just trying to do something different? Were you trying to say, like, hey, let's go more normal? If it worked for you elsewhere, like, what was it that created that tension for you?
I scared out of my mind. I mean, it's fear. So, you know, to grow, sometimes you had to keep going to the bigger playground. You know, and your kid, you play in a little sandbox, then you get to a bigger playground, and then a bigger playground. The slides are getting a little bigger. Gastonia was a tiny little town outside of Charlotte, North Carolina. There was no media. We had one newspaper. And then I get to Savannah when they announce this new team coming in at the city council meeting. All of a sudden I have, you know, NBC, ABC, all the affiliates in my face doing an interview. I'm like, what is happening right now? And I came to Savannah and, you know, when we came here, I was 30, 31 years old, owning a team. My wife was 28, Emily. And to come into this market, you know, Savannah, that's, you know, got history to it. People have, you know, I don't want to say good old boy network, but there's a lot of people that have been in this network, in this business field. And to see this kid running around in a yellow tuxedo, I didn't want to put myself even in a worse spot. Like, who does this kid think he is? They had a professional baseball. Now we got a circus freak running a college summer baseball team in a yellow tuxedo. So I was scared. I was scared. And so it wasn't until, you know, we named the team the Bananas and I said, I'm just going to go all in. And we named our mascot Split. And then we named the Banana Nanas and we just kept going with it. But I said, this is me. And, you know, I think a lot of people, there's a best version of themselves, but often it's hidden by what they're scared of showing to other people. And so, for instance, for me, I believed I'm a showman. I'm outgoing. I'm crazy. I'm not 100% right in the head. You know, like, this is me. And so when I put this on, it's my uniform. And with this uniform, I think everyone has one. But when I put this on, it's showtime. And so now I just kind of owned it, embraced it. And it's still tough. I mean, now it's getting easier because people fortunately recognize us a little more. But I used to go to an airport and every time when I was flying, TSA would check me. They'd be like, dude, I'm like, would I really dress like this if I was going to do something crazy? Like, what are they thinking? And then people like walking around like this, like with their phones, like, and I'm like, I know you're looking at me. Like, do you want me to pose? Like taking all these weird videos while they're walking through. You get over that fear. I talk about my new book, Fans First. I talk about my son, Maverick. When the first time I went to a trampoline park, that he stood in the lobby for 30 minutes because he was so scared to go in. And then finally I walked him up and he sat right down the trampoline. He wouldn't move. Then finally I got him to stand up. And then I was holding his hand and finally moved around a little bit. And then after an hour and a half later, he jumped. And now the kid owns the trampoline park. He jumps over everything. Same thing as a kid. You're first scared. And then you take that first step. You take that first step. Once I started wearing this more, once I started doing things that we're good at doing and felt comfortable with it, and it's grown.
I love the way you talk about that. And you talk about the Chamber of Commerce and the good old boy network and coming to a new city. Because I think for business owners and entrepreneurs, a lot of our audience, they're scared to do something different because they feel like so stuck in traditional, boring business. You talk about in your book, in the Find Your Yellow Tux, you know, done is better than perfect, or the trial and error side. And you seem to like totally embrace that. And I think most of the business mentality, they think, well, it's a baseball team. You can do more. You can risk more. But you just laid it all out. I mean, it's the same. There's debt. There's the good old boy way. There's the Chamber of Commerce. And for all of us in business, I think there's so much we can learn and take away from that of how we can be different in our business and we don't have to be stuck in this boring professional format. And I love that, man. It's inspiring and awesome to think about because everybody just wants to have fun and experience something. And if you can do it and be really good at what you do, it's a recipe for success every time.
You don't get really good unless you do it. And so, you know, we can talk until we're blue in the face about what we're going to do. You got to start doing it. And so, you know, a great interview with Herb Kelleher, founder of Southwest Airlines, and it was about 5 years into him running Southwest, and a business reporter said, what's your future strategy for building Southwest Airlines? And Herb thought about it for a second. He said, it's called doing things. And that was his entire strategy, what he told them. And that simple three words was actually more profound than most people realize. What we believe is so much, not done is better than perfect, which was a great quote from Mark Zuckerberg, but it's do and then learn. Do and then learn. I believe we learn faster than any sports organization in the world because every night we're doing between 10 to 15 new things on a live field in front of a live audience that have never been done before in front of fans. So if you think about it, it used to be one thing, then two, then this past year went 5 to 10. Now I look at our script and there's 10 to 15 things we've never done before in front of a live crowd every single night. So if we're playing 50 games, we're doing about 750 things that have never happened before in a baseball field. And 729 of them will not work well. 700 of them will be a disaster. But there might be 21 that are amazing. And there'll be hits. And those 21 we would have never got to if we didn't do that many experiments. And that's why when I share with the group, and one of the big E's to creating raving fans is experiment constantly. And I share how Jeff Bezos says our success is a direct function of how many experiments we do per year, per month, per week, per day. I challenge businesses aren't doing enough experiments. They're talking about what they might do, but they're not actually doing it. Challenge your people on the experiments that are being done on a daily basis, because that's how you learn faster.
It seems like your commitment to continuous improvement, which again, we would think, hey, if you're improving, that means that every time it gets better. But the reality of the situation is like, well, no, you got to try things. You got to do things to see what works and what doesn't. As you mentioned, like, hey, most of the things that we try, they don't work out the way that we really hope they would. But in that group, there's enough of them that make memorable experience for people that they talk to. You know, that's why you got whatever it was, 80,000 people. It's for the 10% that go right for you, it seems.
100%. I mean, Flatulence Fun Night, Salute to Underwear Night, our Living Pinata promotion, our Horsehead promotion, our first ever and maybe only halftime show. I mean, there's so many things that have not gone well on a baseball field. But the reality is, you got to be able to get through the messy to get to the great. A lot of us entrepreneurs are afraid to get messy because it's going to hurt. It's going to be dirty. It's going to be uncomfortable. You're going to actually upset some of your customers and some of your people while you're getting messy. The first night we did all-inclusive at this ballpark, the first night that was all you can eat. Now, granted, we're the only sports team in the country, maybe the world, that every single ticket here in Savannah is all-inclusive. You can't come into our ballpark here in Savannah without your burgers, hot dogs, chicken sandwiches, soda, water, popcorn, and dessert being free all night. Not for an hour, not for just when the gates open, until the last fan leaves. So we had no idea how to do it. We just said, let's do it. That sounds like a great fan's first thing to do. The first night was a disaster. Some fans waited almost 3 hours for food. They literally got in line at 5:30 and didn't get to eat till 8:30. We didn't know we were going to go through 10,000 pieces of meat in an hour. We had no idea. Who would have known? Who could have told us? On a business plan, it looks great. You say it, then you do it. What most people would have done is they would have quit after that. I said, okay, what are we going to do better tomorrow? So then we added extra stanchions. Then we put drinks in front so people would fill their hands with drinks instead of taking 4 burgers, 3 hot dogs, and then maybe get a drink later. We made all these little tiny adjustments. And now for our banana ball games, where fans show up 3 hours in advance and you'll have 3,000 people in line before the gates open, we can feed those people in less than 5 minutes at any point in our stadium at all times. Got through the messy to get through the great. You got to be able to willing to do that. And it's 100% worth it if you put the commitment towards it.
So for you, whenever you're doing the messy, the trial and error, the learning as we go, are you also operating with that trial and error, learn as you go mentality in the short term, but operating on a long-term strategic plan? Or have you kind of threw out the long term and you all are just really operating in real time? How are you marrying those two things of long-term strategy versus short-term messy figuring it out?
It's funny. I actually don't like the way my mind processes. I don't process failures. Everyone's tell me about your biggest failures. I'm like, we've had tons, but I'm already on my next at bat. We do so much. I'm already to the next at bat. If you focus more on your failures, it's going to affect how you do anything moving forward. So how you view things is how you do things. And so if you're viewing oh, I failed with this yesterday, I failed with this, that's not going to encourage you to go jump back in. That's not going to encourage you to jump back in the pool. Now Mavericks learned how to swim, terrified the first few months. My point is, with what you're saying is the short term and long term, I don't think in the short term much. I think most businesses, what they think is, they think in quarters, short term, what are we gonna do this next quarter? I'm thinking about the next quarter century. It's a different game. So it's long-term fans over short-term profits. So our long-term is to constantly be experimenting, constantly be following towards our vision to make baseball fun and be fans first with every single thing we do. And so short-term, because of that, we're just doing more. We're just trying more. If you want more, you got to do more. It's pretty simple. I want the best. Well, what are you doing to do that? How are you learning? How are you experimenting? So I wish we had a process or a science to it, but really it's just continually experiment and try. And the long-term fans is everything. We really don't have conversations about profit, sales, and revenue. Fortunately, I have our president and our team. They told me there's enough money in the account, which is great. I mean, I know we're selling out every game. And I know merchandise, we're doing hundreds of orders every single day all over the world. That takes care of itself. Let me put on the show and try to deliver the best experience for the fans.
Man, I love that. It really, that in itself just goes back to whatever's normal, do something different. And I think even from a business model standpoint, that's such a different mentality and approach. It's awesome because you're serving what's important to you and you're serving the customer. And at the end of the day, it all works out from there.
And you're committed to also the experience, right? And that's what you're about, is saying, let me create an experience that these people will come to, and then they'll want to come back, but they'll also tell people about it. And again, the long-term vision that you have, which I think is amazing, is not, again, What are we doing next quarter? Or what are we doing in 2023? It's now I'm going to put on an experience that this guy's going to bring his, you know, his kids and his grandkids to down the road. You got such a commitment and vision and belief that you're going to win long term that you're willing to just to roll with the things that you're doing, which most people, again, would be like, that's outlandish or that's crazy. But it's like, no, this is just how we do it because we're going to put on this great experience. I got to ask you one question, though, backtracking for a sec. I got to know how you sold those baseball players that first time. You're like, we're doing choreographed dancing on the field. I just, the sales presentation must have been immaculate to be able to get these guys to go like, oh, we're dancing tonight. How'd you do that?
Oh, no. Most of them wouldn't do it. It was. I wasn't even sold on myself. I was like, you're just going to do this. Some guys like, I'm not doing it. And they were pretty good ball players, but terrible dancers. It was, you know what sells people? It's the recognition from others. And so like, for instance, after our games, our players don't get recognition for the double or the home run or the strikeout. They get recognition for coming up into the crowd in the middle of the game and delivering a rose to their little daughter. They get recognition for dancing on the dugout. They get recognition for going through the crowd and high-fiving everyone after a scoring run. So how are your people getting that feedback? That recognition loop. And then we put it on social media. And, you know, it's crazy. We got 4 million social media followers. We put up a video of them celebrating after the game, like this past Friday. And then all of a sudden, SportsCenter puts it out. ESPN puts it out. And it's like, you just received 10 million views on your celebration because you had fun. That's the feedback they're getting. And so, you know, I think that's really important. And if I could jump on something, I'm just going all over the place, but you
let's do it.
Fired me about earlier about how to have this long-term vision. You know, what I've learned and I try to study the greats, like whoever you are at whatever you're doing. You know, I mentioned a few earlier, like Grateful Dead was the best touring act of their time. Like they created a fan base that was unbelievable. Dave Matthews has followed their show. No one believes like Dave Matthews was the highest touring act in like the 2000s. Like what? Like they don't even have a single out anymore because they did some things that were really, really like strong. Circus Soleil, you know, unbelievable what they did to the circus. Michael Jackson, whatever you want to say about him, possibly the greatest performer of all time. Well, Michael Jackson was obsessed with studying the greats, James Brown, and learning dance moves. He was obsessed. He studied P.T. Barnum, just like I did, on how to create attention. No one was better than Michael Jackson at creating attention in the 80s and 90s. So I study that. And so what I think about when you think about long-term and short-term, the one I've studied recently, and I'm going to laugh because whenever I say this, I laugh, Mr. Beast, the YouTuber.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, what am I, like, Mr., I'm what, a YouTuber? And I have listened to every single interview he has done. And I've read every article that breaks down. He's the greatest YouTuber of our time now. He's got 100 plus million subscribers between all his things. He's making, I think I said, and just on YouTube alone, 54 million last year. It doesn't make any sense. So I'm like, I want to figure out what he does. And so what I did is I listened to all his interviews and I watched him. And I heard one thing over and over and over again. He said, I'm just obsessed with creating the greatest video possible. I'm obsessed with creating the greatest video possible. That's what he thinks about. So when I think about what we do here, what entrepreneurs do, your obsession can be a really good thing. If you try to do so many other things, you will be average at all of those. I obsess about creating the greatest show in sports every single day. And I obsess over those scripts. And I obsess over the characters and the dances and the celebrations and the interactions. I'm obsessed with it. And then what happens when you become so good at that, like what Steve Martin said, be so good that they can't ignore you. And so now, you know, it's wild what's happened. Obviously, the TV show, there's potentially others in the works. There's books. There's other things coming. I mean, last night, Mark Cuban reaching out and tweeting about how he wants to invest in Banana Ball and direct messaging me. It's like, what is happening? I never reached out to them. I was never selling anybody. I was trying to create the greatest show possible and the greatest fan experience possible. And when you do that, and you have the willingness to understand that it's going to take time, 15 plus years in the industry for me, then things start happening fast and quick, and then it gets really exciting.
So on the surface, it seems like y'all are doing 1,000 different things, and all this is going on every night. But in reality, it's getting simplified down into one thing and one thing only you want to be really good at, and the one thing you're marketing and selling, and that's that fans first awesome experience. So I think that's something really awesome for business owners and entrepreneurs, that kind of the entrepreneurial curse that you chase everything and you get scattered. But if you got one simple thing you're trying to do or serve and funnel everything through it, it makes it a lot easier.
That's differentiated. So let me stay with that. That's differentiated. No one needs someone that's just a little bit better, a little bit faster, a little cheaper. What are you the only one doing? The only one doing. So for instance, like I was a squirrel going every direction. Squirrel. I was going like we had events at the stadium, you know, tap in the morning beer festival with the morning beer festival because you can't drink all day if you don't start in the morning. We had that. we had running of the bananas. We had 500 people running in banana costumes. We had haunted stadiums. We did all of these events that brought in hundreds of thousands of dollars, but they didn't make a lot of money. Probably overall, we might have even lost. Our sponsorship, all over our stadium. We eliminated all the ads in our ballpark. We're the dumbest baseball team in the world to eliminate hundreds of thousands of dollars of ads. We don't do any of this thing because we weren't that good at it. And if I'm a business owner, I'd rather spend $25,000 creating an amazing experience or something digitally than putting a billboard up on an outfield wall. Don't sell something you don't believe in. So we went all in on creating this show. And what's crazy is when I focus so much on creating this show, that's so special, then all of a sudden, our content team captures it, shares it out on social media. Then that creates more fans. Then more fans want to go to the show. They want to buy merchandise. And then that leads to us having more shows, which then we create more things. It's our flywheel. So now like merchandise, our sponsorship, which was hundreds of thousands of dollars, our merchandise does 15 times the revenue that we did in sponsorship. And we don't focus on selling merchandise. We focus on creating the greatest show possible and creating fans. And then they want to buy merchandise and tell everyone about it.
Oh, man, that's crazy. And I guess talking about this flywheel and this evolution of what all's going on, you guys are changing now, right? You're going to a world tour. You're about to take this show on the road. Is that my understanding of what's in store for 2023?
But it started with a one-city world tour. We actually literally did a one-city world tour in 2021 where we went to one city and we called it the one-city world tour. But somehow we chose Mobile, Alabama. It sold 7,000 tickets. It sold out. We went to seven cities this past year. You like that. You got to have fun with the marketing. And then we're going to go to 5+ cities next year. You take that small bet, that first at bat, and you take that first at bat, you take a swing, see how it feels. Then you start taking some bigger swings, and then you start swinging for the fences. And now we're going all over the country. You know, it's crazy. In a few years, I believe we'll play in front of more fans than any – in one year, we'll play in front of more fans than any NFL team, NBA team, or NHL team.
Unbelievable. And the goal is to sell out Fenway, right? That's like – that's it for you right now?
Nah, that's one of them. You know, it's something I've always thought about as a kid. You know, I'm still a kid just trying to make his dad proud. And, you know, I think about being a bat boy for the Red Sox and pitching at Fenway and the amount of times me and my dad went to – you know, bleacher seats for $5 back in the day, which good luck getting now. And the idea of taking them on the field and say, look at what we did and seeing 35,000 bananas fans filling Fenway. You know, those are, I always try to visualize an emotional moment. So I try to visualize a moment where you can feel it and you can internalize it. And that's a very special moment, but it also scares me because that happens in 2 years. I want to make sure I have a much bigger vision that can keep us going to the next step. And so it's a part of the journey. And you need to be able to enjoy the journey, just not just the destination.
Yeah, I love that, man. So I want to talk to you a little bit about vision. Because obviously, because what you're doing, no one's doing what you're doing. You've created something that's that blue ocean idea, right? It's like, hey, there was nobody doing this. You're carving a path that I'm sure others will attempt to follow. But I'd also assume that vision was not in you from day one. And again, go back to that phone call conversation where you're just trying to sell. I'm just trying to get people to the park tonight. How can I sell some tickets? Had you already had an idea of like, well, maybe we should do some crazy things that are outside of traditional baseball? Or was it kind of a spur of the moment that thing popped in your head? Like, I'd just like to know, were you already studying Walt Disney and P.T. Barnum? Like, how did this snowball start rolling downhill? Where did the vision start for you? It ends up again with currently Savannah Bananas and Banana Land and all the crazy things that you're rolling toward next.
Well, you guys, I know you heard and everybody listened probably has heard you, the average of the five people you spend your most time with, right? Well, I spend my most time with Walt Disney, Jeff Bezos, Steve Jobs, P.T. Barnum. I read all the books of the biggest visionaries, the biggest dreamers, the biggest doers. And that's my mindset. I think on what would Disney do? What would Bezos do? What would Jobs do? What would all these people do? So that engulfs me. I think about that obsessively. But yeah, when we first started, it was like, just we need to get some people in this ballpark. Can we sell a few tickets? I mean, the amount of rejections. I mean, we went to meetings we're not going to buy baseball or tickets to a Savannah Bananas game. Are you kidding me? Like, it was, you guys are an embarrassment to our city. We'll never buy a ticket. Did I save all those remarks? You better believe it. Even yesterday, when we announced that we are no longer playing college summer baseball and we're going all in on banana ball and taking this all over the world, I had a lot of people say, you know, this is going to fail. It's going to be flat on its face. It's a, all those. Yeah, I took pictures of those too. And it's weird what we get. I get fuel from positivity, but if anybody doubts me, no one puts the time and dedication, at least in my mind, to what we're trying to do. And I have a bigger obligation to our people and our team that's growing. We're hiring a full-time person every week right now. And I have an obligation to them. I'm not going to let this fail. So if you want to throw some fuel on the fire, let's get it going. But yeah, I think, you know, your goal at first is just to try to be able to, you know, be as successful as you can. And then once you start surrounding yourself with people with big visions, big dreams, and you start seeing the opportunities and the joy you can bring to people. I mean, for me, at the end of the night, when the band is playing Stand By Me and everyone has their arms around each other out in the front plaza, and the fans, the players, the cast, we have arms around, and we're singing Stand By Me, and I'm seeing genuine smiles and people pulling up their phone to say, I got to film this because I can't believe I'm a part of this right now with this whole thing. I want to bring that to the whole world. I want to bring it to the whole world. And I feel like I have a responsibility. And I think the greatest leaders have that same type of responsibility, that they believe in their product so much. They believe in their experience so much that they have to take it to everybody. Because if someone's not getting it, then they believe they're letting someone down. And that's how you drive growth. It's not for growth's sake to drive sales and revenue. It's because I want people to feel that moment at the end of the night, singing Stand By Me after hopefully the best night of their life. If I get thousands and millions of people to experience that, I'm doing my job.
So I totally agree with you there on the visionary, the CEO, the passionate about product, get it out there, change the world. How have you been able to staff the operations and the integrators that can come behind you and fulfill all that promise and craziness and experience that you want to provide? I think that's where the rest of us struggle is. I don't know how to fulfill the back end of making it happen.
We're seeing the super scared operations team standing behind you.
Yeah, like, oh my God, he's got an idea again. We're screwed. We're going to be working 90 hours this week.
I think it's interesting. I've thought a little bit about this and how we bring on people. And I think a lot of business owners, they're focused so much on recruiting. You know, there are business, you know, the managers, I got to bring people to be honest. We're focused more on attracting. So like right now, attract over recruit. So for instance, right now, we have 1,500 people on our wait list to work with us. So that's to work with us. I don't know what's with wait list. We have 80,000 that's on wait list to get tickets. We have about 100 people on the wait list to be a banana baby. People, when they get pregnant, they literally say, can we put our future baby on your list to be a banana baby before a game? It is bizarre. It is bonkers. But anyways, we've developed some lists. And there are about 1,500 people on this wait list to work for us, interns, full-time, part-time. And what I realize is because we have been so good at sharing who we are, what we stand for, sharing the fun, TikTok, social media, YouTube, constantly showing the fun, that people that see it and believe in what we're doing want to work with us. And if you have people that truly believe what you believe, they will run through a wall to make sure you get accomplished that. So I think a lot of people are trying to pull teeth. I got to get you to do this. I got to get you to do this. If you are so passionate and share, great leaders are great communicators, and they're also great at sharing. You know, you see me, I mean, I post on LinkedIn all the time and I share our behind the scenes story of how we're doing it. It's not only just to hopefully inspire others. It's for myself to become a better communicator. And it's also for our team to see, wow, this is what's going on Jesse's mind. Bob Iger said this with Disney. He said, great leaders, you know, we try to lead by press release. I'm like, what is this, Bob Iger? And he says, what I do is we announce the future of the company and the vision and what we're doing by big press release, big announcements. So then the people that are part of Disney, they feel proud of the company. Mm-hmm. They feel proud of what we're doing in this park. They feel proud of the new movie we're launching. And so when you get people proud, then you'll see that they feel they want to tell everyone, look what we're doing here at Disney, whether they're a custodian or whether they're a big part of the movie studio or whatever that is. So that's kind of how we try to lead.
How are you able to take, so again, there's so much excitement with what you guys do because you're creating these phenomenal experiences for your clients that are coming through the gates. How are you able to drive your culture down to the lowest levels of your organization? So again, as you're talking about, you know, vision and communicating vision, are you able to get your team to like amplify and like regurgitate the vision you're casting? How is it like the guys that are doing, again, the basic levels of Savannah Bananas, or completely bought in?
Yeah, you know, I think there's obviously huge opportunities for us, and there's challenges that I struggle with. But, you know, now we have 200 part-time team members. You know, we're growing 40, 45, 50 full-time members, you know, 15 to 20 interns every quarter, every season. So it's hard. I don't get to touch everybody on the staff. And what you hope is that the leaders on your division, you're constantly communicating and can get down that way. What, again, I hope is that they're proud of what we're doing. They're proud that they see there's a TV series about us right now. They're proud to see our games on ESPN. They're proud to see the Today Show with us and Access Hollywood, which is hilarious that we were on Access Hollywood. But like all these groups, like Japanese media came here and all that, like, wow, I work and I'm a part of this team that's being seen by millions of people and making an impact. Now, that's not every business, but I'll tell you, if you do something that's worth talking about, something that's remarkable, which the definition of remarkable is worth remarking about. If you do something that's remarkable, people will want to talk about it. Everyone asks, Jesse, who's your PR firm? I go, you're looking at us. This is what we do. And we don't have a PR firm that's pitching us. We just try to do things that no one else is doing that's truly unique, that makes an impact. And the media comes to us. So if you do that, any company, no matter what you do, you can create attention in a positive way. And then your team members, even at the lowest rank, can potentially feel I'm part of somebody, a company that's doing something special.
So I think for me, where I struggle, and I own an accounting firm, and we're in the accounting business, so the most boring part of anything you could ever imagine is when we look at creating remarkable, we're remarkable because we can perform at such a high level for the client when it comes to CFO services and tax planning and business stuff. But we're only remarkable because we're willing to put in that much work and effort. As much fun as we want to have, it still takes a lot of commitment and work. But you've been able to balance that. Y'all can provide the fun and deliver the remarkable product. And I think that's where we struggle, or I struggle on the business side of things.
Well, I think there's questions you can ask yourself. So, for instance, if what we call the PFT, the perfect fan testimonial. And again, I don't look at customers or clients. They're all fans to me. I think you change the language, you change the way you treat people. So if you look at any one of your customers, clients, vendors as fans, it'll be different. So what's your perfect fan testimonial? So if you could write what one of your fans could write about you, what would they say? The perfect one. And this takes time. This takes time. I mean, it came down to us. We want people to say it was the most fun I've ever had at a baseball game. And potentially maybe it was a circus and a baseball game broke out, but it was the most fun. So the most fun guided us in every single thing we do. Maybe your firm is not all about fun, but fun drives us. So when you think about what you're doing, what those words that stand out, that perfect fan testimonial, that if you could put on the top of Google, that every single person in the world would read that. What does it say? And reverse engineer and build towards that. And then you can start saying, all right, we're going to be remarkable towards that. But if you're like the most integrity, you know, the hardest working, like there's certain things that just doesn't inspire or motivate. It doesn't paint a picture. When you think about the most fun, what I think about is everything in this ballpark that's boring and not fun. And I try to do the exact opposite. So from every piece of dead air, from every part that's quiet, that's not wild, that's not crazy, that's boring, we eliminate and try to create that most fun that they've ever had at a ballpark.
Yeah, that's really good. And that provides a lot of insight of a different way to think about it from my side. And I've never thought about that testimonial standpoint of what that perfect customer testimonial looks like, or fan testimonial. And I love the commitment to the fans, because when I first started learning a Savannah Bananas, I thought, man, this is such amazing marketing. But it's not marketing. It is delivering for the fans, which just creates the marketing. So
what percentage of our budget do you think we spend on marketing?
I have no idea. I would have originally thought probably more money than you're making on marketing when I first became familiar with the bananas. But now, knowing the model, it's probably next to nothing. No way. Zero.
We spend $0 on traditional marketing. We spend everything on our experience. I mean, when we go to travel to different cities on our world tour, the Globetrotters travel with 30 people. We travel with 120 people.
It truly is a circus.
We bring an entire pep band, a 10-person pep band, players on stilts. We bring our male cheerleading team, our breakdancing coaches, our hosts, our DJs. We bring everyone. We invest in the experience. And if you create such a great experience, then your fans do all the marketing for you.
Yeah, I can't remember who this quote is attributed to. You probably know who it is, but something along the lines of advertising is a tax that companies pay for being unremarkable. And your thing, right? It's like, hey, we just do something that people fall in love with.
John DeJulius.
Yeah, there you go. So they're willing to talk about it. So we don't have to spend money because people are just talking about it anyway, which I love. So I got a question for you on you mentioned Jeff Bezos several times. Just looking at the vision for Jesse Cole, the vision for Banana Land. I'm assuming it's got to be the first baseball team on Mars. It's got to be in there somewhere, right? Long-term vision.
Jeez, maybe I'm thinking too small now. Now you got me going back to my journal tomorrow.
If you could only narrow it down to like, all right, you mentioned these guys, Bezos, Walt Disney, P.T. Barnum. If there's a young entrepreneur just getting started, or maybe it's an entrepreneur and they've been doing it for a minute, but they're transitioning or they're just switching gears. And you could say out of these experts and the greatest in the world that you follow, they can only follow one of them. If you had to narrow it down, like, hey, you could just pick up this book or pick up this guy's story. Is it P.T. Barnum? Is it Steve Jobs? Like, if you could only pick one for us, who would it be?
1,000%. Walt was the most well-rounded, inspirational leader ever, in my opinion. And the reason why, too, you know, Walt died in 1966. Okay. So that's now, let me do my math, 34, 50, whatever, 50 plus years after. And Disney is still thriving. How many companies, 50 years after their founder, are still thriving? And the book I recommend to everyone, it was one of the first books I ever read, and I literally have it in my backpack all the time. Yes, I just sounded like a kid that goes to school. Yes, we have backpacks. Our whole team has a special custom backpacks. It was a surprise. My wife, Emily, has 1% of the budget to upline to spend on surprising delights for our staff. So she got us some backpacks. But in my backpack, I always have How to Be Like Walt by Pat Williams. And Pat's been a big inspiration for me. Pat was actually at our last game here. He was the founder of the Orlando Magic, and he's written 125 books. It's crazy. But that book, How to Be Like Walt, it shares how to deal with adversity and naysayers and challenges and vision and how to have an obsession with the attention to detail. And I mean, from marketing, from salesmanship, he did it all. And it's unbelievably inspirational. So I would definitely start with that one.
And that comes back, I think, to something you write about and believe in, and that's always being a sponge. And is that kind of what you're relating to with always learning and reading and changing and experience-wise of everything that happens, kind of that process? Is that what you think has been a big part of leading to where you're at now and the continued success you're seeing?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, we're obsessed. Now, do you have any reading programs at your offices, your business?
We don't. We have been back and forth on doing a book a quarter, doing a book a month. We implement it and then get away from it like everybody when we get busy. But I did love in Find Your Yellow Tux, somebody mentioned they paid their team members for every book they read. And I thought that was really cool. Wow.
Yeah, that's what we started with, Better Book Club. So yeah, we paid thousands of dollars to our team to read books and do book reports on them. And then we went to reading as a team because we realized if we get everyone on the same page reading certain books, like we all read a book about Grateful Dead, Everything in Business I Learned from Grateful Dead. So we want to learn the tour, how they built this touring thing. So, you know, we read books about Virgin, we read books about Chick-fil-A, we've read books about Southwest Airlines as a team. But yeah, it started paying out for every single book they read. So yeah, I think it's so important, the learning culture that you develop and really develop a learning culture. And that's been really big for us.
Is that something that you all use in the hiring process as part of kind of your core values of whether somebody comes on board or not? Is, hey, are you willing to be a sponge? Are you willing to read a book a month? Or is that part of that process in the front end, or do people just get in and that's
No, we learn in the, we have a long 2 month plus hiring process. So we have culture hiring. We have people send in their future resume, not their former resume. We want to know what you want to do in the future, not what you want in the past, which is a great test for us. So we also have a video cover letter because everyone, no matter what you are forward facing. And we want to see, do you bring energy, enthusiasm? And then we have also them do an essay, two-page essay on our 6 core beliefs. Always be caring, different, enthusiastic, fun, growing, and hungry. And so we ask them to say, how have they done things in their life that have been them growing or them hungry? And then we ask questions, about the last books they read, the last things they learned in regards to business. And we get that gauge pretty good feel on that early on.
And that's awesome to ask you again for people. You're saying, hey, this is what our culture is. How do you see yourself in this culture and explain it to us? I love that. In regards to the books, when you guys are choosing books for your team to read, because we do the same thing. We're actually reading one now with our team that I'm sure you've read with yours. Remarkable. Bob David Sawyers.
Ah, I love David. Yeah, we were just texting the other day. He's amazing. Love
yeah, him. So we're reading that one, which again is a great book, and we love what is there. But how do you choose the books? Is it you, or is your team choosing? Are you choosing? Is it a leadership team that's choosing what books you go through?
Yeah, it started with a leadership team, and then we pick two or three that we were interested in potentially next quarter, and then share it with some of our team members and say, which one do they want? You know, with anything, you want ownership. And if people feel like they made the decision, they're going to be more invested in it. So we started building out more, getting three or four or five people from our team say, hey, between these three books on X, which one do you want? And what big thing for us is we've gone very deep on companies. So, you know, if you just read a business book that has just so much information about a bunch of different little companies, you might not get the same about going really deep on a company. And so like we read the BrewDog book because they were very disrupting the beer world and what BrewDog did. So we got obsessed with that. Southwest Airlines, their whole. So I think that's very important to us. So we look, oh, like Grateful Dead. We read an entire book on the Grateful Dead business strategy. So that's been helpful for us.
So I say this almost every episode, Jesse, and that's probably a bad thing because I should probably like invent something new, 10 or 15 things new every episode to try out. But no, we talk about it near the end of the episode. Chad hates it, which is why I continually do it because he's not my fan that I'm reaching out for. This is, hey, we're going to land the plane of the episode. So we mentioned that, you know, the Stronger Business Podcast, every single episode, we ask our guest if you could give us a max out moment, which would be the one thing you could leave our listener with. But if they didn't listen to anything else that we had to say, or they zoned off when they're running on the treadmills, hey, don't forget this thing, remember this thing, implement this thing, what would the max out moment from Jesse Cole be?
It's on the back of our Fans First playbook that we give to our team and we share with our team. Be patient in what you want for yourself, but be impatient in how much you give to others.
Oh, that's I love it. Yes, that's good. Man, this is, I've got like pages of notes over here, and this is just a beginning step in the excitement and all we're going to learn at Stronger Business Summit from you, man. This has been extremely valuable for me. Cannot thank you enough for joining us today. Where does everybody find you at? Obviously, Savannah Bananas on Instagram. Where else can people reach out and learn and figure out more about what you guys are doing?
I'm very easy to find myself. You search Yellow Tux, you'll find me. So I'm very easy to find both online and in person. The staff loves it at the ballpark. They're like, oh, there's Jesse. You can't miss him. And then the Bananas, yeah, we're easy to find. We're really committed. You'll see. I mean, we post numerous times on all of our social media. We're trying to share the fun, spread the fun, and hopefully making an impact. So we're easy to find. And then, games, we're going to take it all over the country. So we'll have a big announcement in October where we're going, and people have a chance to see the show, hopefully.
Man, that's amazing. My wife and I, we're headed down September 3rd. We've never been to a game. So we're coming down on Saturday next week to check it out and experience Banana Land in person. So I'm pumped.
Love it. We got some surprises. We actually are going to have a World Series champion and all-star, Major League All-star, well-known name pitching for the Bananas coming out of the pen that's never played for us before. So we got some surprises.
Oh, man. That's
yes.
Awesome.
And even more surprises coming October 13th, Athens, Georgia, man. We're excited to have you in town. Appreciate all you're doing, inspiring all of us. And thank you for joining us today.
Thanks. A lot of pleasure. A lot of fun, guys.
All right, guys. Until next time, grow stronger, and we'll see you at the summit.
If you enjoyed this episode of the Stronger Business Podcast, be sure to leave us a review and share it with a friend. You can find us online to connect at strongerbusiness.com or on Instagram and Facebook at Stronger Business. We look forward to hearing from you, and we'll see you at the summit.